did. We'll get to that shortly. Good evening, guys. Welcome back to another Tuesday night live here with Golf Days Australia. A reminder, if you're joining us and you want to get involved and ask a question or throw a comment in there, basically back in the description of tonight's video, there's a link there for StreamYard. You just click on that. You give us permission to bring up your name and your photo as well. So we're always looking to be interactive. That's part of the process here. So if you've got a question for our guest tonight or us or any guests in the future, you've just got to click that once, give permission, and then you're right to go for any future chats. But Double Par, welcome, mate.
G'day, mate. How you going?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you going?
Yeah, all right. Just smashing some pizza or trying to.
Are you?
No free ads.
I hope you're going to mute yourself while you're smashing that pizza, mate.
Yeah, that's the plan. Mute is my friend.
it's normally the
heavy breathing, but tonight it's the pizza.
Look, it's something different tonight, mate. We've got a ex rugby league star on, so something a bit different for us, and I'm looking forward to it.
How good's that? Grand final week, and I think, mate, this bloke might have played for one of the clubs that's playing this week. Is that right?
Could have. He's done a few things. His list is pretty long, so we're going to get that in a second. But before we do and we bring him on, you right there, mate?
Yeah, I don't know. What happened?
Right, well, Double Par's got it. You're hopeless, you are. Before we get started, just a quick shout out to our sponsors. So obviously we're proudly partnered with a few companies and they've been awesome with us so far in this growth period that they're doing, and with our podcast and our Facebook page as well. So thenetreturn.com.au, if you're after a net, you want to, you know, set up that home simulator or anything like that, go and check out that. HT Tran has got something for you, and we've got some good deals coming up for that, coming into Christmas as well. So stay tuned for that. Obviously Dint Putters. Big shout out to Cobra Puma Golf. Mate, do you like my shirt, Double Par?
Yeah, I want one.
Yeah, it's a stretchy material, mate. So it's one of those ones that's perfect for like flying through the airport with your golf clubs in tow and just walking straight on the golf course. Oh, that doesn't feel right at the moment with COVID, talking about that. But wait, when everything opens up, I'll be able to wear it through the airport, mate. I'll get you one.
Thanks, mate. Cheers. You're right.
And of course, sessionset.com. So here we go. Crack it open, mate. They're a beer company, a craft beer company that are looking after us, and they do the subscription craft beers. So if you're wanting to get into something a little bit different from the, you know, the mass produced beer, this is the entry level to get into. This is the way to do it. They've got a subscription deal. You go in there. We've got a code at the moment, GDA beer or GDA cider, all one word. Get your $20 off your first case. You get 16 beers delivered to you. Random craft beers from independent breweries, supporting Australian breweries. They support their charities as well. Go on to sessionset.com. Have a look at what they've got. Tuesday night, they've got a heap of different happy hour deals as well. So there's multiple options there, and they do free shipping to the Sydney metro area. DP, what beer are you drinking tonight?
I've got the Hop Sauce Pale Ale from Sauce Brewing Co.
Nice. And I've got a parallel as well from the Hairy Man Brewery. So, they've been excellent so far. And like I said, if you don't know what to do and you're looking to just splash out, get something different, this is the way to do it. Get it delivered to your door. Takes the guesswork out of it. GDA beer, GDA cider, $20 off. All right, let's get into it. Tonight's guest, mate, he's played over 300 NRL games. He's won a couple of premierships. Clive Churchill Medal winner, represented New South Wales, represented Australia. He's now doing awesome things with his charity, with his foundation. Luke Pritis, welcome to Golf Days Australia, mate.
Evening, guys. How are we?
Mate, we're good. We're good. Excited to do this. Like I said, something different for us. We normally are talking to somebody that's, in the golf industry, the golf world, and I think this is perfect talking to you tonight. And obviously, you've got a bit of a link there with the charity Golf Days that you're running as well. So thanks for coming on board.
No, great to have me. I have sort of spent a bit of time in a couple of pro shops and that, so buying beer and hot dogs and stuff when I've been out on the green. So Don't rule me out as a golfer.
Not at all. Double Par doesn't mind a hot dog.
Oh, mate, I am smashed a couple hot dogs, and you can never be ruled out as a golfer, mate. You've seen some of these blokes like Harry Higgs.
He's a normal sort of role, I think.
DP, good. I'm handing the reins over to you, mate. I want you to you can do the ice breaking segment this week.
This is risky. This is risky. So, Luke, we normally do what we call a quick fire par five, but we've renamed it tonight and we're going to call it our superset of six. So it's six quick questions, one word answers, get the thing going. You ready?
Doesn't have to be one word. You can go a bit more than one word.
Bend it two or three. Yep. Okay. Yeah.
Single syllables though for Nate because he's from Leeton. So here we go. Do you have any footy superstitions?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, see,
what are they?
Well, one word. Yes, I do.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. You're going to get fired.
Yeah. What are they? Okay, when I was playing, I used to always want to have spag bowl the night before. I used to always want to be one of the first blokes strapped because I couldn't just hang around and wait for other blokes. That put me out of my routine. And I used to sort of always try and find the same spot in the shed to sit.
Yeah, excellent. So, toughest opponent on the field?
Any other first grade footballer.
Oh, that's soft answer.
Yeah, come on, we want something.
Come on.
You sure it wasn't Ryan Hinchcliffe?
So it was anyone pretty much bigger than me. I played with a few tough blokes like Ruben Wickie and Tony Carroll. They were sort of probably two of the hardest hitters if you're talking about tacklers. But yeah, I'll be diplomatic and say, no, I think out of everyone that wants to play NRL first grade football, there's only sort of 450 odd blokes that get to do that every year. So if you sort of get the strap on the boots and play one game, you're pretty good, I think.
Favorite movie?
Billy Madison.
Hey.
Do you have a current golf handicap? If so, what is it?
Yes, I do, and it's me.
we'll take that. Yeah. Last question. If you had to choose a hole in one or another NRL premiership, what would it be?
Ooh. Can I have both?
No.
No. Ooh. Well, I've never had a hole in one, so I'll take another NRL premiership. I've lived this long without a hole in one. I can probably finish the rest of my life without one.
Awesome. So I've got a bonus question. Favorite football mascot of all time?
Football mascot?
Yeah.
Jeez, I don't know. Captain Charger?
there's a throwback. Done.
Mine was that I was a West Magpies boy, and the Magpie was a little bit creepy, actually. I always remember that at the Campbelltown Stadium. He was a bit creepy for me.
He was. I remember playing with Brisbane and Buck the Bronco. Every time Brisbane scored, he used to have to do a lap, and back then it was like the old Brisbane ANZ Stadium, so it was like a full-on 400-metre track around. So
busted.
A few of those games, if we were racking up 50 points, he was just doing laps.
Thought he was at Eagle Farm.
That's right.
So we'll get into it. So you're born in Dubbo, moved to the ACT and played for the Woden Valley Rams, yeah?
Yes.
What was that like growing up? What did you get up to as a lad in that part of the world?
Oh, look, I'm pretty much lived all over the place. We started at sort of Wollongong when I left Dubbo. We were in Sydney. Then we sort of moved out to Wagga for a couple of years as well. That's where I suppose started playing a little bit of rep football when I was in sort of under 12s and that. Then moved to Canberra as a sort of 14, 15-year-old, and that's where sort of Harold Matthews back those days was sort of under 15s. So I played sort of Harold Matthews. I was pretty much on the bench back then. I think we only played four games. That was the season. I think I probably played a whole 30 minutes or something. So it wasn't sort of a natural star there, and then just grew up and end up sort of coming up through the ranks when I turned 17. One of the coaches sort of turned me into a hooker, and that's sort of where I stayed and sort of kicked on from there. So I mean, as a young bloke, Canberra was great growing up until sort of you probably got to the age where you could have a few drinks and that, and then Canberra started becoming very small. So it was good as a young kid because you jumped on the bus and could go all over the place and not get into trouble. But I think no matter where you live, you always make it your own. There's always sort of something that's better outside. But, I like sort of living in Canberra, but now we're in sort of in Sydney, it's a different story. And got to live all over the place as well through football.
As you said, you cracked it with the Raiders, yeah? So that was your first club and you got Rookie of the Year, 97, correct?
Yes, that was my first year, yeah.
Yeah, so what were the highlights of that year? Who was the coach? Who was your team? What was going on in your head when you first started your football career?
Yeah, so, I mean, I've played footy since I was four, so my old man played footy, my pop played footy in that as well. So I suppose just like any kid, realistically, just to try and be a footballer. The one thing that my parents always taught me was that my schooling had to come first. So if I didn't sort of do my schoolwork, I couldn't go to training. So that was sort of always instilled in me. But I suppose that first year, Mal Meninga was the coach. I played with, I suppose, a star-studded side. We had Ricky Stewart, Laurie Daly. I had the two New Zealand props in Quinton Pongia and Johnny Lomax. They were my sort of two bookends. I had Brett Hetherington. Who else do we have? We had David Furno, Bradley Clyde, Ricky Stewart, Laurie Daly, who was half 5'8". Centres were, who was in the centres? I think Ruben Wickie was in the centres back at that sort of stage. David Boyle, Noah Nadruka on the wing, Kenny Nagus on the other wing, and flying in the back. So it was a pretty good as a 19-year-old to walk into that sort of first grade side and be sort of have all those blokes around us. So that was obviously the year that Super League kicked off as well. So privileged to be able to, they started the Super League comp and we got to spend a couple of weeks overseas in the UK as well. So as a young bloke, that was pretty cool traveling around and doing that stuff as well.
You mentioned Super League there. You that year you got to represent New South Wales and Australia. That must have been, for a young kid, for your rookie year to represent at that level must have been amazing.
Yeah, it was. I mean, as I said, just making first grade because I was, I suppose, behind Simon Wolford there at the Raiders.
Right.
He played the first few games after Steve Walters had sort of moved out to Townsville. So it was between sort of Germ and myself and, play a handful of first grade games and then get called into it was the Tri-Series back then. So that was Queensland, New South Wales and New Zealand. So got to play that and got to play in the longest rugby league game. That was that final for the Tri-Series. I think it was myself and I think it might have been Robbie Ross. We both sat on the bench for the whole game and then basically got pulled in at extra time. The claim to fame was I got to throw the pass.
Was that Kamali?
No, Goldthorpe.
That's right, yes.
I remember when Noel was a young bloke. I mean, I was obviously even younger. My old man and his mate coached Noel in St. George sort of jersey flag, and I was this little bloke that used to run around at Cars Park where they used to train with all these blokes and, to basically come up and play a game of football with Noel after being a little tacker running around with him. That was pretty cool.
Now, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit because I've just got a question. I just want to compare what it felt like to play Super League compared to, I guess, when everything went back together. So I'm talking rep-wise as well as comp-wise. Do you look back on the Super League? How do you feel when you look back on Super League?
Yeah, to me, that I suppose some people say that it's not wasn't a true sort of representative, but, I mean, to me, you look at the other blokes that played for Queensland and New South Wales in the ARL side, doesn't lessen their jumper either. So I think Super League was a good concept, what they were trying to do with the game, but I suppose it was probably more the way that they went around doing it, which, as I said, in essence, split the game in half. That was sort of the worst output from it. But, I mean, you sort of look at the game now, these blokes playing around, I suppose, if Super League didn't come along, would the game still be sort of in that semi-amateur sort of way now where blokes are still having to work? No, they're not earning sort of $3, $4, $5, $6, $1 million a year. So, I mean, everything happens for a reason. It was probably the wrong way to go about it, but I think at the end it sort of got the hierarchy of the leagues to sort of look at the sport as being a profession, not just chook raffles, etc.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you can't really live in those what ifs. So I think if we do look back on it, it's definitely been a positive for the game overall. But we get through that phase and you end up winning your first premiership in 2000 for the Broncos, yeah, beating the Roosters. How was that?
Yeah, pretty awesome, actually. For me, going up to Brisbane to start with, I'd sort of had my 2 years at Canberra and I'd actually signed to go to the Adelaide Rams. So I was sort of finishing off a university degree, so I stayed in Canberra until I sort of did that and then sort of rolled over there with my now wife, and we sort of had just sort of found an apartment or a little townhouse to set up, and I was basically over there for 4 weeks and did a bit of training, and then we got cut. It was sort of, what do I do now? And basically I ended up having a chat with Wayne Bennett, and I found my way up to Brisbane. And yeah, I spent sort of a fair bit of the time on the phone saying, you know, if I play well in trials and all that, will I start? And it was no, because obviously they just won the 99 premiership. So going up there, the 98 premiership. So I went up there in 99. And then 2000, yeah, it was great. It was my first premiership. But I do remember the blokes, you know, the senior blokes up there, that, you know, to Brisbane, it was more a relief when you won a grand final, because the expectations were if you got to a grand final, you won it. So here I am, first grand final, you know, running around like a little school kid, but they were all sort of like just weights off their shoulders and they could actually relax. So it was sort of a little bit different. And I suppose when you get to, I suppose you're going to ask about 2003, so I'm going to skip ahead. I felt that same relief in 2003 because I'd been sort of the only bloke with Marty Ling. He played in the Super League Grand Final in 97 with the Sharks, but I'd been the only bloke in our side that had won the Grand Final. So to me, it felt like a bit of pressure that I had to sort of stand up and lead the way. And again, I think you sort of see after, if there's any footage of myself on the field, that I'm sort of more relieved than anything, whereas everyone else is jumping around and kissing and hugging each other. I was sort of just glad the game was over and we won.
Well, let's be real. Like, that 2003 grand final, is that the game of your career?
Oh, look, I suppose on the big stage it is. I still sort of think that there's a few games that, you know, even during that season, that I probably performed better. But when you sort of break it down, we scored 3 tries. I set up 2 and scored 1.
Scored the other.
Now, apart from Sats, buddy, having a rest and then picking some bloke off in some weird tackle. It was a great game. And as I said, I suppose personal accolades for that. I got the Clive Churchill, which was great. And you look at it and people ask you sort of many a times, does representing Australia or New South Wales is winning a premiership better? They're all different, but representative football is a personal accolade, whereas when you win a premiership, you've been with these blokes for 45, 46 weeks of the year. You're trying off. You got one goal and you achieve that, and only one team can achieve that every year. And to reach that pinnacle, it's something that you never forget. And there's been plenty of champions in the game of rugby league that haven't won a premiership, like Wayne Pearce was an idol of mine growing up, and, all these test matches and all that sort of stuff. I remember asking him, and he basically said, you'd trade all that in for one grand final. So
yeah, I mean, it's the never-ending joke with, Nathan Hindmarsh, and that is that, he never got to win a premiership. And that's, to win one in 2000 so early on, and then to back it up in 2003 and getting to experience that with a team that, had nobody else had that experience. That after party must have been something else. I know my wife was a massive Panthers fan, and she was at Panthers for, I think, the week after that win. I think there was about 10,000 of them there at Panthers. That must have been an incredible couple of days afterwards.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. I remember sort of coming back in the bus, and the first thing was that all of our wives and girlfriends come back in another bus, and because the club was absolutely chockers, they couldn't get in. There's a handful of us blokes that sort of went out to the security and said, mate, they're coming in, and they end up sort of coming in the back door underneath the tunnels for the stage sort of thing to get upstairs. And then, we got into what's Evans Theatre sort of thing. After being upstairs, we come down and the fans and basically crowd surfing and all that sort of stuff. I think I was the first one that jumped out there and got carried out and carried back, and then Gerds jumped out there and he just got torn the strips, you know, all the Sheilas were ripping his clothes off and that's where everyone else. He came back and had nothing left on him. So it was some pretty sort of wild times, and yeah, we sort of went over to the ground the following day, etc., for the fan day and all that. And obviously,
yeah, well, she still talks about it today, and she said to say thanks as well, because she was on Luke Rooney for first try scorer, so you helped set that up, and I think she drank for free the rest of that week. So they keep talking about it, her and her group of friends of that Panthers after party, and it was something else.
Yeah, I remember going around the game afterwards and all these blokes in the crowd showing me their tickets that I'd sort of made back me for Clive Churchill, and it's like, no.
What were you paying?
Oh, I think I was sort of around sort of $14 to $18, I think. Yeah. So there's a few blokes that cleaned up. Took
first ever hooker to take it as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's been a few since. I think Sean Berrigan from Brisbane, Berrigan. But never know. This week, obviously, there's a pretty special hooker that's playing that hopefully he loses, because I want to see the Panthers win. But no, wouldn't be surprised if it is his last game, if he plays out of his boots and claims that prize as well.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you about. Yeah, sorry, go, Dubba.
But how good was Sattler's tackle? Like, that was a great tackle, right?
Oh, it was. But if you get the wide camera angle, Sats was actually chasing that kick, and he was actually having a rest. So I sort of always joke with him that he was there to make the tackle, but he should have, because he should have been up there and tackling him. Burns sort of 5 meters out for their try line. So he basically just made up for his own laziness to start with.
So you mentioned this week, obviously massive timing with the Panthers in the grand final against the Storm. Your heart's with the Panthers. Is that who you support nowadays? Like, you know, who do you follow?
Oh, look, I just sort of watch the game, I suppose. I still out west near Penrith, so that's, I suppose, my home team. And this year I didn't get to go and watch any games because of COVID. Yep. But, that's sort of, I suppose, where the heart was. When I retired, it was more just following some of the blokes that I'd played with. But now they're all sort of getting older and most of them have retired as well. So, putting the heartstrings back to Penrith, that's always good. But my wife goes for Brisbane, so there's some some tense times. She obviously didn't have a good year.
She's had a rough year, yeah.
I made sure she remembers that. But we've had a couple of years as well as the old Panthers, so it goes in swings and roundabouts.
That's right. You think they can get it done this weekend?
Oh, look, they're there. That's a massive hurdle to get there. I mean, I suppose if you really go off form from last week, you'd have to say that Melbourne's a pretty short favourite. But at the end of the day, it's Penrith get Big Billy back, and it's it comes down to who turns up on the night. You know, Melbourne might have a sort of an off game. Panthers may have an off game. So let's hope that it's whatever it is, that it's a good game for everyone to watch. We don't want to see any blowouts.
No, we don't. I think the biggest worry is that Panthers can have those lapses in kind of concentration. They seem to, play and just fall asleep, and that's when the other teams can pounce like South kind of did. So it'll be interesting to see this week and how they go. But yeah, I'll be supporting for the Panthers as well. I'll be backing them this week. So Dubba Pa, are you going on?
Oh, I can.
Playing with that run sheet there, mate.
Oh, no, I'm all over the shop with it. So you did represent Australia, though. 2005, Anzac Test. How was that?
Yeah, that was my one, I suppose, full Australian game. So, I obviously had a pretty poor hooker in front of me called Denny Badiris. He was a pretty useless sort of player, so he kept me out of out of those. Look, it was good. And I suppose Wayne Bennett was the coach there, so he obviously knew me from Brisbane for my time there. And obviously one thing that most people don't know is that he actually, after the grand final, tried to get me back to Brisbane, and I'd pretty much agreed to go. And then things sort of fell over. So, playing for Australia, I always say that's the pinnacle, regardless of people saying that playing for your state is sort of the pinnacle of rugby league because it's fast and all that sort of stuff. I'm still a bit of a traditionalist to say that. Now, when you pull your country's colours on, whether it's Australian, New Zealand, whoever your countries that you're representing, that's the pinnacle of whatever sport you can get to. So to be able to sort of pull on that jumper was a great, I suppose, reward at that point in time for where I sort of got to in my career.
No, yeah, definitely. Well deserved. So you talk about Wayne. What was he like to play for?
Yeah, look, to me, he was probably one of the best, probably the best coach that I had. He knows how to manage men, and that's his forte. He doesn't try to overcomplicate things. Rugby league's a pretty simple game if you don't try and overcomplicate things, and I think that's where a lot of coaches probably fall down, is that they think they have to be too technical, and when you're dealing with a whole group of players that, you got some blokes that don't watch rugby league at all. No, they turn up, they train, that's their day. But apart from that, they want to get right away from rugby league. So trying to teach these blokes the same sort of things, where you've got blokes like myself, when I played, I'd watch almost every sort of game there was on the weekend because I wanted to know who I was playing against next week and their weaknesses, if I could pick anything up. So I sort of studied the game like that. So when you've got coaches that then try and play mind games and all that sort of stuff, like that, and again, Parramatta with Brian Smith, they're always up the top, but they could never win. And now you talk to some of the players that sort of went into that club and came out of it. And yeah, at the end of the day, they all sort of said, well, half the time we were just sort of rat shit in the head because we didn't know if you were actually starting, playing on the bench or whatever. And when you can't just sort of set into a routine and focus, it makes it really hard. So, Wayne was, I suppose, able to just keep things simple and talk to blokes how they needed to be talked to. But I've got my disagreements with Wayne in different ways that happened further on in my career, but I'll leave those to the side.
Right, I was going to touch on that, but if you want to leave that. 2009, obviously you get reunited with him, and apparently, he tries to advise you to retire at the end of 2009, but you go on, you play 300 games in 2010, and they make the grand final, but you don't get a start there. There's a couple of things I wanted to focus on there. Firstly, 300 games is an incredible achievement, and, obviously in that 300 club, did you have many injuries in your career? To get to that level?
No, I didn't actually. I dislocated my clavicle or my collarbone when I was in Canberra, but I only missed, I think it was only one game or something I missed with that. And I was pretty injury free, I suppose. I had lots of niggles and I needed surgery once I sort of finished, but I suppose it was at I did my knee in terms of like a medial ligament once when I was at Penrith, and that probably kept me out for sort of 2 weeks. And then
quite incredible.
I did the same thing at sort of St. George, which kept me out for 2 or 3 weeks. But I suppose that was, for someone like me, I wasn't sort of blessed with the skill set of a Darren Lockyer or those sort of blokes. So to me, being durable and doing my job was what sort of kept me in the team. And I always had a fear of, if I missed a game, a young bloke could come in and play really well, and yep, I'd lose my spot. So, if I did have any sort of injury, I was pretty clinical in that I'd stay up all night and I'd ice it for the full first 24 hours. The ice baths before and after training and all that. I really sort of tried to do everything that I probably could to make sure that my body was in as best shape as it possibly could. If it was 85% and I could play, well, as long as I knew that I wasn't going to let the team down, that was sort of what I did.
Does your body feel like it's played 300 games?
Well, surely does.
So do you look at Cameron Smith and just go, how are you pushing that number?
Yeah, I mean, look, training's, he probably started, I think it was 2003 when he started, and training had really sort of come full circle around those sort of days. I mean, when I started, we were still doing 5K runs. At Brisbane, there was a run called The Gap, which we did once a week, all all off season, which was I think it was a 7 or 8K run. And if you didn't hit your time mark for being a hooker or whatever, and I wasn't built to be a long distance bloody runner. more than often I wasn't hitting my mark, and when you didn't hit your mark, basically once everyone had finished, you then had to go and do extras after doing that. So times have changed, but obviously, he's been someone that's been pretty blessed as well, not to have injuries as well. So, but I don't think anyone's going to get close, or maybe a Cleary, Cleary's only sort of 21, 22 and is nudging almost sort of four seasons. He might get there, but
it's incredible what he's done.
Yeah, it's obviously incredible what he's done, and he deserves all the accolades. Even though he's a hooker and I hated playing against him. But yeah, you've got to give credit where it's due.
So do you want to talk about 2010, how the career finished and how you finished up?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Happy to do that. I suppose, 2009. Yeah. No, I had a bit of a falling out with the coach here at Penrith in 2008. I pretty much lost a whole season. So I probably could have got close to 350 games. Hadn't I sort of been sat out, but 2009 went down there. At that sort of stage, I was still living up in Penrith. All my kids were at school, so I wasn't going to move down there. And it's the first time, I suppose, I'd ever lived away from, probably 10-15 minutes away from where I trained. Obviously, it was a good hour to hour and a half trip down to Wollongong from Penrith. So I was given a bit of, I suppose, leniency to stay up for recovery days, etc., where I didn't have to go down the Wollongong. And it probably came back and bit me in the butt a bit because I wasn't there at some of the video sessions, etc. And at the end of the day, I lost my position there in 2009. And as you rightly sort of said, Wayne sort of called me up in that off season and basically told me to retire. I told Wayne in no small fashion that's fine. Get your checkbook out and pay me out for the last year, and I'm happy to retire. I've got a business set up, so that's fine. Yep. And he kept going back and forward and wouldn't. And I think it was the week before pre-season training was supposed to start, and I was sort of expecting a phone call to say that, you're paying on your way. But he basically told me to turn up to pre-season training and that you'd be basically playing with Shell Harbour for the whole year. And I went, well, that's fine.
And then Nathan Fein gets injured.
Then Nathan Fein gets injured the first game, and I slip in there, play the probably three quarters of the season, and we get to sort of close to the semis. And Feeney had sort of recovered from his broken ankle a bit earlier than thought. And Wayne sort of pulled me in and basically sort of told me that Feeney was going to come back into the mix, but I was probably going to still be the starting hooker, and it was probably Dean Young that was.
Yeah, Young, yeah.
Potentially going to miss out. And I went, that's fine. And between that Monday and the Wednesday when the side was named, something changed, and I went from sort of being starting hooker to being right out of the squad. And I think that was sort of the last game, apart from we went and played Brisbane there at one stage, and I think Youngie may have played State of Origin or something along the lines, but end up having to sort of pull out at the last minute, and I sort of started hooker for that game against Brisbane. And then that was sort of the last game that I played. So I was a little bit dirty.
It's a weird way to finish the career. I mean, with them going on and being victorious in the grand final that you've obviously helped them to get to, but then not playing and not having that chance to win three premierships at three, that must hurt a little.
Yeah, I mean, that didn't dawn on me until sort of someone had mentioned it afterwards. And yeah, but it was more the way that it was done. If I was spoken to in an honest man-to-man thing, saying that, this is what's going to happen, and look, you're the one that's going to miss out, and I could deal with that. But as you said, when you're told one thing and then all of a sudden you turn up in front of everyone to hear that team announced, and that's how it's done. Everyone's sitting in the room and the team's announced, and I'm thinking, I've just been told on Monday that I'm the starting hooker, and then I'm sort of not in the side. That's basically the last conversation Wayne and I had for the rest of the season. That was what I was dirty about, and I still have a chip on my shoulder about that. And I won't sort of I won't apologise and say that I don't, because as I said, no, for a bloke that sort of stands up there and talks about, you know, loyalty and all that sort of stuff, it's fine to say that, but no, it only happens when he's happy to do that sort of thing. And I know there's a lot of players that he's been very close to over the years, and I mean Gordon Tallis is one of them. Again, that has his own story that, you know, that relationship has soured when he was sort of finishing off in his last year as well. And yeah, I mean, as I said, I've said it on this post podcast that you know, Wayne was the best coach I've had, but in terms of being the best person, yes, he was father figures to blokes like Darius and Lockyer and that during careers, but that's not something that I ever experienced. And yeah, I've got different thoughts around that as a man, I suppose.
Is he on the Christmas card list?
No, he isn't. And look, I suppose one of the funniest stories is that, no, I thought I'd buried the hatchet and got over it after I'd sort of retired, and I got up the courage to give him a call. I managed to get his mobile number because I knew someone that had it, and this was like for the foundation. And we at those early stages, we used to have a grand final breakfast and then a grand final sort of lunch before, you know, Triple M started their big grand final lunch and took all our audience. But so I got up the courage and I called him. I said, "Oh, look, mate," this is the first time I'd spoken to him since I'd left St. George. And I asked him if he'd come down and be our guest, and that, you know, we'd fly him down there and fly him back and blah, blah, blah. And he agreed. So I thought, oh, this is great. And I end up picking him up from the airport, and basically he got in the car and said hello. And then basically just for the hour trip from the airport to Penrith, he was on his mobile phone the whole way in there. And I was like, okay, well, then we, you know, we got off and we had sort of lunch. And when we were asking some, sort of, you know, we got up there on stage and we were having some questions. And I can't remember who the MC was, but beforehand he'd sort of teed it up and said, "Oh, no, do you mind complaining about, you know, 2010, you're missing out?" And I said, "No, mate, I'm over that. No, it's all fun and games." And he did, and Wayne sort of just changed like that, and he sort of got really serious and blah, blah, blah. And I knew Wayne didn't drink, but no, we'd still had these sort of bottles of wine made up for our guests, and I knew that no, Trish, his wife, didn't mind a drop of wine, so I sort of gave that to him, and he sort of basically rejected it and didn't want it, and sort of told me to get the car and take him back to the airport. And yeah, that's the last time I've sort of really, really spoke to him. But so I thought I was over it, but I wasn't. And then that sort of, and anyway, but you know, it is what it is, and life goes on. And as I said, no, there's always going to be those sort of weird stories and relationships in any sport. But that's my little relationship, I suppose.
Yeah, and I guess if you look back at the career you've had, like, you know, if that's the, you know, the worst thing, I guess, or the worst relationship, but you know, the talking point out of it, then you know, it gets lost in everything else that you've done with the grand final wins and 300 games and that. That's just a small part. So, DP.
Wow. So you've mentioned a couple of times, Luke, your foundation. Do you want to tell us about the Luke Pritis Foundation?
Yeah, so our third child, Cooper, who's now sort of 18 and a young adult, and we're trying to look at post-school options for him now. He was diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder at age 2, and being out here in the Penrith area at that sort of stage, you know, we're talking 2000 and 2002, 2003, there wasn't sort of much in the way of support. And I didn't even know what autism was about, neither did my wife, Holly, and she's a researcher, so she sort of used her researching skills and taught me what it was about. And now we end up getting him to sort of a day program. I think it was 2 half-days a week or whatever, but it wasn't enough. But we wanted to raise some funds for that. They wanted to build a new sandpit. And me being, stupid, I suppose, said, well, if we're going to put on this fundraiser, why don't we make it big and bad and get all this money in? And then so we ended up sort of forming the foundation, and yeah, we've gone forward from there. So we officially launched it in 2006, it was, and we've been going, what's that, 16 14 years now. We've started a center for in Penrith with Allied Health being speech, psychs, OTs, those sort of skill sets. But we also run social skill programs of varying types for our kids and young adults. And, you know, we've been through some ups and downs with the charity, but you know, the thing that sort of keeps both Holly and I going are, you know, when you sort of, if you are down the street or you're at a function or something and someone comes up and they thank you. They thank you for starting the foundation because of the difference it makes to their family. That puts all the troubles aside because it is hard to run a foundation. I always sort of think, and Holly and I sort of question ourselves a lot of the time, what would have we been doing if we weren't? But as I said, it's that one family that then comes up and all your troubles go away for at least a couple of days and then things start again. But people talk about, I suppose, your legacy in sport and all those sort of things, which is great. But again, my football career is only going to ever be a short part of my life. And I'd just like to think, I run a financial planning business as well, where I get to help people on a day-to-day basis, but I get paid for that. But the foundation is a voluntary role that myself and the rest of the board, including my wife, Holly, we put a lot of time and effort into that. And as I said, it's voluntary. So to me, that's hopefully going to be a long-lasting legacy that continues well after I've sort of hung up the boots or sort of may not even be on this earth. And that's sort of hopefully what I'm remembered as, plus being that bloke that sort of won the 2003 grand final with Penrith.
I would have said the bloke that played in that grand final with Sattler's tackle, but you can go with that.
Yeah.
So, mate, 14 years, you're no mug, you're a financial planner, it's tough. What can we do to help?
Oh, look, we've got our golf day that's coming up, and I suppose we haven't sort of touched on that, but we do a golf day every year, and every other event that we've had this year has been cancelled, but the golf day is something that I've strived to get in there. We only sort of made a decision probably 4, maybe 5 weeks ago that we were actually going to go ahead with it. We're going to roll the dice and go ahead with it. And we're out there at Twin Creeks next Friday on the 30th. And look, it's not so much about supporting the golf day. I mean, we're almost pretty much sold out, but it's just awareness. The biggest thing that we started the foundation up was to make people aware of autism. Because we went through so many times where we'd have Cooper and we'd be down the local shops or in the big Westfields or whatever, and Cooper is sensitive and still is to this day to babies crying and noises, etc. Mm. And that would set him off and he'd have a meltdown and people would sort of stop, stare and point fingers and that at you. Just give your kid a smack on the bum, he's a naughty kid. But what we're after is just having people, I suppose, stop and just think about, well, is it really a naughty kid? Do you know what that parent or that family's going through? Most of the time you don't. So the best thing that you can do is look and learn a little bit about autism. If you can go to our website and learn a little bit about autism, but it's more about a kind gesture that, again, the child may not have autism. It may just be an atypical child having a two-year-old tantrum, but is that still right to point and cuss it at that family? No. The best thing is to go up there and just ask that mother that may be stressed because of what's happening, do you need a hand, whether that child's got autism or not? Being kind to people is a lot easier than sort of standing there making gestures and making that person feel sort of awful when they're already in a stressful and awful situation. So that's probably the biggest thing that I can say that your golfers and all those out there listening to this tonight is just be, I suppose, have a think before you make some actions, because some of those actions, while they might not be physical, they can be sort of pretty hurtful to a family that's going through a stressful time.
Definitely, mate. I couldn't have said it better myself. As a school teacher as well, you just see the kids that are suffering from things like this or going through things like this. And I think a foundation that just brings awareness is just so important, let alone supporting those families and what they're going through and helping them, have some of those good times. And just, I guess, get a break from it all. So where can people go to check out the website and future events that are coming up and make sure they don't miss the golf day next year?
Yeah, so it's just lukepritis.com. So there's no AU on the end of it because we're international. Is that what they say?
That's it. Yeah, yeah.
Lukepritis.com. Have a go on there. And as I said, if for some reason you do want to sort of support us in any way, know that the phone numbers and the email addresses are on there to contact us. And know we're always after volunteers or we're into sort of forming relationships with businesses, etc. And if there's any of our professional golfing buddies out there that are listening to this that are billionaires or millionaires that want to drop in a couple of coins, no, happy to accept. We are a gift deductible charity, so happy to accept donations of all kinds. Usually five figures would do from most of the boys.
Well, mate, I think Double Power agree. I'd love to jump on board and help you guys out for the next one next year and, you know, put the Golf Days Australia name behind it, get it out there and hopefully get some of the guys that we've had, some of the professionals on board that day as well and build it up. I think it's a great thing what you're doing. What do you reckon, Double Power?
Mate, it sounds like it's right up my alley. Father of two, Nate's just had a newborn and look, it's not about the coin as such, it's about awareness. And I think, yeah, it's something that we definitely need to get around, not just as a podcast, but also just society. I mean, that word kindness, it's not enough out there, especially with 2020 being what it is. So, Luke, mate, you're doing an amazing job. Keep up the good work. I know you probably don't get enough praise. Please, mate, if there's anything we can do, reach out.
Keep it coming.
And look, so if you can get me Sattler's signature, I'll flick your jersey.
you mentioned Cooper's 18 now. How's he going?
Yeah, look, so he's this year was pretty hard. We pulled him out of school.
Yep.
The start, and then COVID hit, so he probably did more schoolwork at home with his carers than what he has for the last couple of years. But yeah, now he's sort of transitioning. He officially finished year 12 per se last week. So we're transitioning to a post-school program now that he's sort of going two times a week. Hopefully we increase that to sort of three times a week. But no, Cooper's, I suppose, on the spectrum where he'll always need support wherever he is. No, he won't be able to sort of go into the atypical workforce in any sort of sense. But, I suppose the biggest thing around Cooper that Holly and I will always say is that, no, he's changed us as individuals. No, he's had a profound effect. And, if Cooper wasn't Cooper, no, I don't think that Holly and I would be the individuals that we are today. So, no, he's one of four kids, but no, they're all special in their own way and they all have their own issues in their own way. But, I mean, that's the biggest challenge now. It's lucky we've got sort of a couple of families that we sort of follow that their kids sort of went to school with Cooper earlier on, and they're probably like a year or two ahead of where we are. So we're sort of now back to being the little fish in the big pond where we're following other people in their tracks so that we sort of don't make the same mistakes that they've made. So it is a hard life, I suppose, having a child with autism or any sort of disability. But again, it's sort of one that makes us who we are, and we love them all the same. And hopefully, as I said, get through COVID like everyone else. And next year, we're looking for a brighter year for both ourselves and as a family, and for Cooper in his future going forward.
Yeah, I think everyone is. I can't thank you enough for coming on tonight, mate. I think it's been a brilliant chat, not just about your career, but obviously the foundation and, you know, sharing your family story with us and with Cooper as well. And, mate, I hope the golf day goes well next week. And like I said, if there's anything we can do, and hopefully we can sort something out for next year's golf day and we can jump on board and be a part of it, it'd be great.
That's awesome, guys. As I said, just getting it out, getting the name out there, that's what it's all about. And, you know, we obviously only just touched base the other week, Nat. So, mate, it's great to have you blokes supporting us. And for sure, right now, I was actually part of your Facebook page, I think, before you invited me.
So, brilliant.
Not as I said, not an avid golfer, but I do like to get out there and have a chop when I can. Don't have enough time, but, when we do have our golf days, they're pretty good. And I've had the experience of going up to Jack Newton's classics
charity.
And no, there's a lot of sort of friendship that you build out from those sort of things. So I think it just shows, no matter what sort of sport you play, that those same sort of bonds are built on and off the course.
So do you hit the range up the day before the charity day to try and get the swing back ready to go?
Oh, yeah, I haven't been up there for probably 3 years now, but yeah, we did. There was a little Penrith crew that got up there for probably 3 or 4 years in a row, and yeah, we always left early. We booked in for the round the day before, and then me not being not being a real good golfer, I just always said, put me on the early tees so that I'd finish at lunchtime, and then I just sat in the bar and drunk, and as long as I got to the tee the next morning, Jack was happy. And obviously as the days go on, the young professionals that sort of probably got on the drink too hard in the first couple of rounds, they get put back with the bloody in the first group. So I then just sort of pizzle them and say, you're calling yourself a professional. And that's a bit of a good time. But they are sort of some great events out there. And I know I just sort of recently saw that Jack's doing it a bit tough up there. And Clint Dunn's obviously taken over the foundation up there for him. But they've done wonderful work for what they're doing with junior golf, and obviously diabetes is his cause as well. So it just sort of shows that when you've got good communities that come together, you can make a big difference no matter what the cause is.
Definitely, definitely. Double par. Anything else before we wrap up, mate?
Mate, I reckon I could sit and talk to Luke for hours over a few beers, and it'd be awesome. But, mate, Luke, thank you. Everyone, lukeprittis.com, get amongst it. Make yourself aware, support if you can, but just share that kindness.
Yeah, I'll pick you up on that. LukePrittisFoundation.com, double par. Get it right, mate.
Prittis Foundation.
One job. You started so professional.
Thanks, Luke. What we'll do is we'll just put you back in that green room. We'll wrap up and we'll quickly touch base when we're done. So thank you again for coming on tonight, mate. Appreciate your time.
Awesome, guys. Thank you.
DP.
Yeah, legend. LukePrittisFoundation.com.
Thank you, mate.
Yeah.
Like you said, just about having beers with him, I was just going to say as soon as we wrapped up, he could join us in our golf group at any stage, I reckon. I think he'd fit in pretty well. He even used the word chop there for you, mate.
He did, mate. I picked up on that one. I thought he's not the only chopper on this thing tonight. I'm dead set having a chop.
There's but three Luke, of us there.
Yeah, LukePrittisFoundation.com. We'll put it in the chat, eh? Let's put it in the group and
definitely
get amongst it.
Yeah, definitely, and just bringing that awareness. And like I said, his career is one thing, but what he's doing with that foundation is a whole nother thing. And he mentioned the word legacy, and I love that. If that's the position you're in and you can do that and you can create a legacy like that, we spoke to Greg Chalmers a couple of weeks ago, similar position, has a son that had autism, created the Maximum Chances Foundation. We spoke to him about that foundation and him about, creating that legacy over there in America where he's living. And it's just brilliant. It's brilliant to hear what they're doing.
Yeah, no, it is, mate. It's definitely, awesome. Awesome work and kindness. It was great. What can we do to help? And it's not about, money's great and all those multis that we've got. The list of this podcast will be spinning some money, but it's just about kindness and understanding and looking at what other people are going through and just not jumping to conclusions. So very good. I'm actually on the website now. There's a bit of a shop there, mate. There's some.
Yeah, it's good. I checked it out today.
Golf umbrella. Golf umbrella.
There you go. I might have to replace the Bunnings one.
It's currently unavailable, so I'll stick with the Bunnings one.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining us on another Tuesday Night Live. It's been another cracker. So we're going to wrap up. We're going to record our other podcast, wrapping up the golf from the weekend and looking towards next weekend as well. So that'll be dropping tonight/tomorrow morning. So make sure to get onto your podcast app and subscribe to Golf Days Australia. All right, Double Par. Thank you, mate.
Catch you, choppers.
And we'll see you next time. See you next Tuesday. We're three golf tragics. We're weekend hackers and we love to go for golf. And I
showed you guys that on the weekend.
Yes, you did. We'll get to that shortly.